Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot Podcast planned for you. We are finishing our preview series with the Pacific Division, and then we're getting into a little award talk on top of that. MVP, DPOY, Rookie of the Year. We have some thoughts. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. It's time, man. The NBA is back. It's time.
It's here. I feel it. It is Tuesday. The NBA season returns. We've got a fun doubleheader coming up, which means we need to finish these division previews, Steve. We've done five. It is now time to knock out the Pacific Division, our final one of the series. We start with the Los Angeles Lakers. They won 50 games last year, Steve. 11th in offense, 17th in defense, 14th in net rating. It's going to be the first full year of the Luka Doncic experience. And so if I'm talking about my personal excitement level with this Lakers group, it kind of starts with a question, oddly enough. Is this actually going to be the Luka MVP year? He has been in the thick of the race pretty much his entire career. No LeBron to start the season. We know Luka's going to have the ball in his hands. Is this actually the year, Steve? Can Luka do it?
It's a good question, and it's in the back of my brain, and I know, obviously, we'll talk about some MVP stuff a little bit later, but when it comes to Luka, there's a lot of positive elements for him with this Lakers roster. We know how defenses are going to treat him. We know what he's going to do with every coverage, and now with LeBron on the mend, waiting for him to come back, can he produce early, and does that result in early success for the Lakers, and can he get the combination of his production, his statistics, and a winning record to push him over the top this season when it comes to the MVP? I think that feels like the bottom line, but he's got a great opportunity to start. I do think the Lakers do have to have a hot start for it to work.
Yeah, I think the Western Conference is going to be a monster, as it is just about every year. You're talking about one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player of all time, being out for a little bit. Going to have to take on some heavy lifting. Luckily, Luka Doncic is used to that. And I think related to, well, what you said, Steve, about the context, I am excited about him under JJ for a full year now. Like, this is someone that they were teammates together in Dallas. JJ obviously has a ton of respect for Luka Doncic. I wonder what at all tweaks about the usage. Like, we know it's going to be pick and roll. Is there going to be an uptick in off-ball screens for Luka, even if they just flow into pick and rolls? Like, we've had the jokes on the podcast before about what the off-ball usage for Luka has looked like.
Stagger,
catch, hold. Here comes screen. Did you put two on the ball? Here's another assist. But I am curious about the actual volume and the actual designs. And once we get into some of the lineup versatility buttons that the Lakers can press, and I know I have some questions on that front as well, but different combinations can unlock different things playset-wise at the very least. So I do wonder what looks different about the Luka experience this year.
Well, I think that ties into something I'm excited to see. What looks different about the Lakers experience this year? What does Coach J.J. Redick try to do in year two that he maybe didn't get to in year one, especially knowing Luka's going to be there and LeBron obviously will come back? So we've seen them kind of experiment with a little bit more movement, more elbow action to get Ayton, Hayes touches, Luka even at the elbow, and kind of get him and Reeves in action together, trying to generate some sort of movement and flow to go from side to side as opposed to just pick and roll. And so how does that help not only Luka, but the overall team? More stack pick and roll to just try and get some movement, to get defenses to make a decision and play out of it. So I think that's going to be important for the Lakers to establish a base offensively, not just for Luka. I think you can always get to the Luka stuff, but just to have something for Austin Reeves, for the bench unit to run. And then as LeBron comes back, you just kind of have this combination of things that can overpower you offensively. I think that's got to be the vision. But I want to see what he attempts to do. You know, it feels like they've tried to do a lot of get action, get Austin Reeves downhill, and just try and influx movement where they can. But I think it's just get the ball up the court, start your actions early, get to the second part, and let's play out of it.
Yeah, I think quickly bounce off of that. You mentioned Austin Reeves a couple of times. Naturally, he's going to have the ball in his hands a little bit more, too, while LeBron is out. This feels like a pretty big year for him. He's already firmly established himself as a really good offensive player. We knew he wasn't going to take any kind of extension this offseason just because his contract situation, he could just make a lot more. And I think there's mutual interest for those two teams, for those two parties to come together later this summer. Hey, man, is this fringe all-star Austin Reeves? Like, second half of last year was really good for him. We know he can shoot. We know he can drive. The playmaking is perked up during his time. Like, this feels like a really fun runway for him as well. And once you factor LeBron back into the fold, like, one, he doesn't have to do as much heavy lifting during the regular season at the very least. And we talk about some of these second units that Lakers can toss out there with Luka leading the charge, or if it's going to be Austin Reeves leading the charge. He seems more equipped to deal with that kind of role. And if he takes a step up, that also bodes well for the Lakers. So I'm excited to see what that portion looks like there. I guess quick question I'll toss to you before we get into our actual biggest question marks for this team. If there is an area of Austin Reeves' game that you want to see perk up this season, what would it be?
Decision making.
Okay.
And playmaking. I think we know he's capable as a scorer. I think he can operate in pick and roll. Our defense is going to treat him differently. Is it just going to be a drop? Can he grow when it's a drop? Or are we just hoping Austin Reeves makes shots, Austin Reeves gets a different coverage, that opens something else up?
Okay. That's fair. That is fair. Two of the biggest questions. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no. Answer your own question. What do you think?
It flows into my biggest question mark. It's going to be just defense as a concept. But beyond that, to your coverage point, like, I do want to see what he looks like against more switches if they see it. I think, again, I trust him overall as a driver. But if he gets a higher dosage of that, like, does that limit his effectiveness at all? Or is he able to just work through that, punish mismatches, do some matchup hunting of his own, and he takes a step in that regard to your overall decision-making point?
What's an Austin Reeves matchup hunt look like?
Smaller guard. Smaller guard or young defender that gets reachy, because Austin Reeves is very smart at drawing contact.
Okay.
But to the biggest question mark, you've talked about being excited about the evolution of this offense. I want to see what this defense looks like, Steve. There are some pieces of the personnel that I like individually. I look at this entire roster. I'm just like, what level is this defense going to get to? The Lakers were the switchiest defense in basketball last year. Is that something that they want to replicate? You've already talked about them experimenting with more drop this year. Also, read Steve's preseason takeaways piece we haven't already on yahoosports.com. Really good stuff. Quick hitters on all 30 teams. You want to check that out. But plug, there you go. What do they want to do structurally, defensively? And within that, how well do they execute? Because as the West is going to be tough, I don't know if 8th in offense, 16th in defense is going to get them top 6 with how tough the conference is going to be. They can still be very good. But, like, I do wonder what this is going to be.
Well, let's talk about the defense. And I think the most important thing for the Lakers is to just have a strong base and have the ability to do different things. I think when it comes to what I'm talking about with the base is, do we know when we're rotating? Are we solid on our closeouts? Are we showing early help? Can we keep the ball in front? And then when it comes to the scheme versatility, last year I feel like they got caught in, okay, we don't want to put 2 on the ball. We don't necessarily have the navigation to execute drop how we want to. Mm-hmm. Let's switch, show early help. And they had good activity. The problem was when they couldn't keep the ball in front. And now that activity led to different types of rotations and they had to help and recover, make multiple efforts. They got dinged there. So as good as their scheme can be, and I think they will execute, I think JJ Redick will demand that. Mm-hmm. If they can't keep the ball in front, it won't matter as much because teams will just be able to put different players in action. So Luke is going to be put in action. Austin Reeves is going to be put in action. It can't be a combination of we attack your players and then we put your big in pick and roll. We can get what we want either way. So I think that's where the Lakers kind of have to have just a solid foundation defensively. But I've liked them going to drop with DeAndre Ayton and saying, you know what? We're going to stay at home for the most part. We're going to navigate. This is the spot you get. And we're going to play out of that. So being able to do that, being able to mix in switches, depending on your lineups, having some sort of versatility, I think is important for them.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, I do wonder, to your point about 2 on the ball in particular, because I cited the switch thing. They were 29th in drop rate and in blitz rate last year. I don't think they're going to suddenly become like a top 10 blitz rate team. Like, I still think JJ largely doesn't want to do it. I do wonder which matchups he decides, hey, let's sprinkle this in. Is this going to be whenever we see Lakers Wolves, for example? Let's put 2 on the ball against Anthony Edwards and test them out. Kind of like we saw in pockets during the playoff series last year. Is this going to be... I'm just excited about Houston as a concept because they starting lineups now is going to be wild. But just in general, like, when does he decide he wants to do this? in addition to kind of the base building there. So I'm intrigued. Did you have any other questions about the Lakers beyond the defense? I know that was the big thing for me. I have some minor ones, but.
We kind of talked about earlier about how much movement can they create on offense? Can that be something they do consistently? Or is this going to be, we run something, we hold, now it's ISO time? Like, I feel like Rui Hachimura has been very aggressive in the preseason, but it has felt at times like, well, we didn't have anything, let me go get something. Austin Reeves, you mentioned the switches, attack. We got Luka, DeAndre Ayton. How involved can we get him? Yeah. You know, I think lob threat doesn't feel appropriate, but roll threat does. So can we get him something on the short roll? Can he make the right decision as far as mixing in the shot, knowing when to kick and spray, knowing when to go attack and finish? How much versatility can they get to in their lineups? I think it's an important thing for the Lakers this year. Mm-hmm. It's funny because last year they had a level of versatility. The problem was it was all the same type. So you just swap wing for wing who does almost the same thing. And it's like, well, you have different options. They do the same thing. So mm-hmm. can they kind of get to a different spot where, hey, this lineup tilts a little bit more offensively, this lineup is a little bit more defensive, our switch lineup, our trap lineup, our activity lineup. So that's kind of where I'm at question-wise.
Okay. We're going to talk a little bit more about Ayton shortly. Dalton Connect got his option picked up. I do wonder just what kind of season he is going to have if we're going to do minor questions right now. Because I do think JJ wants to move, he wants to use him in a lot of their movement stuff. And he is at their he's at his best when he is utilized in those kind of movement actions. To your offensively slanted lineups, if he's able to hold up enough defensively, I would imagine his shooting would be very important. Can also be a screener for Reeves or LeBron, et cetera. Like, there are bigger names on the team, but Dalton Connect has an opportunity, I feel like.
Well, that actually leads into my other question tied to the lineups. Who emerges in this early portion of the season? Because in the preseason, my big takeaway was, hey, you guys, do you understand there's rotation minutes on the line here? Mm-hmm. I was specifically potentially talking about one of the people you just named. But who's going to kind of find their pocket? I think Gabe Vincent's a really important player for this team. Marcus Smart gives him a layer of versatility. But Jake LaRavia, what you going to do? Dalton Connect, what you going to do? Bronny, what you going to do? Jared Vanderbilt said, I would like to play more. So I'm going to defend my tail off and attack the basket. Well done by him. But who's going to emerge and kind of take that spot and help lift the Lakers so they have that consistency and night in, night out?
There we go. Let's stay right there then. Steve, who is your breakout candidate or X factor for this Lakers team?
The X factor for me is Marcus Smart. I think, has he graduated out of X factor category? Probably, but I think he's the most important piece for this Laker team outside of Luka Doncic, LeBron James, DeAndre Ayton potentially, because I think he can tilt what they do. If you're looking at Marcus Smart, his defense speaks for itself. If he can get back to the level that we've seen him play, that's going to help the Los Angeles Lakers because he can take matchups. He's great off ball. He brings activity. He's going to raise the compete level. Offensively, if you're able to have him mix in timely makes, and now if he's able to kind of get downhill in action in pick and roll, you know, it's something we talked about when he was in Boston. If Marcus Smart is in pick and roll or Marcus Smart is driving a closeout and you have other players in the lineup, look at who that ball is now going to based on what he's done. Mm-hmm. So if he can bring that to the Lakers, that's important. So if you have a version where Marcus Smart's playing well, you got Gabe Vincent knocking down shots, that gets to some of the versatility that you're looking for as far as we can do different things at different times.
Okay. I like the Marcus Smart shout. And I certainly hope that he's able to get back to the defensive level that we've seen from him. Maybe not in years past. Like, this is a DPOY winner. I don't know if it's fair to put that expectation on him. But, like, there is certainly a middle point between the DPOY year and, like, the Washington / Memphis stint, right? Anything between that, I think, would be helpful for the Lakers. And also, you got to prove the choice of Marcus Smart over Jordan Goodwin, right? So we got to make sure that that's a good one there.
What?
That was just for you specifically. But also, shout out to Jordan Goodwin making the Phoenix roster. We'll talk about it a little bit later. But for me, the obvious one is DeAndre Ayton, because we have seen him help spearhead a finals appearance in Phoenix when he's locked in on both ends, setting good screens, finishing at the basket, knocking down an ungodly amount of mid-range jumpers, being able to switch when asked defensively, but ultimately performing well enough in a drop. We have also seen DeAndre Ayton when he is not locked in. When the drop's a little soft, we're not getting the strong contest at the rim. He is mid-range heavy. You're not feeling the rim juice from him. He has to be fully locked in on both ends for this Laker team to hit its ceiling. So, like, that's the obvious one for me. And beyond that, hello, Rui Hachimura. 3-point shooting, cutting, closeout drives. He's going to be asked to defend a lot of different players, especially once you get into some of the different lineup combinations that Lakers can get into. Will he continue to be two-way impact player for the Los Angeles Lakers? They're going to need him. They're going to need for him to hit that level for them. So those are probably my two. You already talked about Gabe Vincent, so I won't hang there. But DeAndre Ayton and Rui Hachimura are probably my two. Steve, what? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, is that because you're also concerned about them as well?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I guess less so Rui than DeAndre. At the very least, like, I don't have, like, motor questions with Rui. Like, I know he is going to compete defensively. I know he is going to cut when he sees the opening. It's more so you're going to get catch-and-shoot opportunities. Are you going to knock those down? The answer has largely been yes as a Laker, but I do just kind of have that in the back of my head. Ace's got to bring it because the talent is just there. But we talked a lot about lineup combinations and lineup versatility. Steve, what do you think the Lakers' best lineup is going to be?
The lineup that I think will unlock the most things for the Los Angeles Lakers: Luka Doncic, Marcus Smart, Austin Reeves, LeBron James, DeAndre Ayton.
Okay.
I think if Smart is in that lineup and he can be used as a screener, he can have the ball in his hands. If he's in action with Ayton, it's Luka, Reeves, LeBron spaced. I think good things come out of that lineup, and I think you get enough two-way juice there. Mm-hmm. What say you, sir?
The framing is killing me. I think the best lineup for the Los Angeles Lakers will be probably their projected starting lineup when healthy. Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, LeBron James, DeAndre Ayton. I think that's going to be the group. A lot of size across that group. So if they do want to continue to lean into switching, they can do that. And offensively, you just have your three playmakers. You have Rui that can play off of advantages. DeAndre Ayton, again, if he screens, rolls hard, finishes, etc., he should be fine in that group. Steve, what is the lineup you are most excited to see?
Likely the one I just stated. Okay. I would like to see that lineup play basketball as well. But if we are allowed to think outside of the box when it comes to basketball, here's a potential lineup that I would like to see play. Let's go Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, LeBron James, Gabe Vincent, and let's put Jared Vanderbilt in at the five. And or Rui Hachimura. That would be fun.
The thumbs up is killing. Okay. The lineup that I would like to see. Smaller group for me. Gabe Vincent, Marcus Smart, Luka Doncic, LeBron James, Jared Vanderbilt. So we are aligned on DeVando at the five. Because as you mentioned up top, he seems healthier, seems more better conditioned. We know what kind of defensive player he can be. He just seems reared up and ready to go. The three-point shot will always be a question mark, but that seems like a fun group to be. And now we move to the other team in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Clippers, Steve, also coming off of a 50-win season, 50-32. They were 15th in offense, 3rd in defense, 5th in net rating last season. And Steve, I'll toss it to you. What are you most excited about with this Clippers group?
No. What we're going to do here is we're going to call a quit timeout. There's no way you watch that second unit play with Chris Paul and you're going to sit here and pass me the ball. I just want that noted on record that was outrageous, because I know you've been bursting at the seams waiting to talk about Chris Paul, and you're going to act like you're not, and I'm not going to let you get away with it. But wow. For me with the Clippers, I think this is a team where it's their depth and it's their lineup versatility, and they've got a lot of talent that I don't think we've felt from the Clippers. I think we've always known they've had pieces, they've had defense, they've had players, but okay, what's missing? Is the small lineup going to hit? Do they have enough around James and Kawhi? Does James have to create everything? They've got a lot. Zubac obviously improved, but now you bring in Bradley Beal, you bring in John Collins, you bring in Brooke Lopez, you bring in Chris Paul. That's just a lot of skill and IQ on top of what they have base-wise when it comes to having size and versatility and defense. And so I think blending that together gives the Clippers kind of a lift throughout the regular season to a degree, because we can kind of move through these. And then in the playoffs, it's not – you have to take a lot more away in theory. Because the talent that I mentioned, they are good. They don't have to do as much as they had to do in previous stops. That feels important. And so you can manage James Harden, Kawhi Leonard a little bit better than you have, which, by the way, Kawhi seems ready, and he might be inspired. And the league might find out.
He couldn't even finish. I'm sure Steve aspired to get that joke off without laughing, but unfortunately. Okay. I am right there with you. I think the second unit is going to be a ton of fun. I am excited to see Chris Paul in this context, Bradley Beal in this context, John Collins, who already just seems to be in heaven. You mean to tell me all these dudes can pass the ball? And also, this defense is good enough for us to just get transition opportunities, which means I get to run again? Sign me up. And then here's Brook Lopez. Whatever you need him to do. 5 threes a game in preseason and limited minutes. Like, all right, cool. I'm cool standing out here or screening for Chris Paul in what is probably the slowest but most effective pick and roll that we've seen since Joe Ingles, Derek Favors in Utah. And we're just going to boogie. Oh, there's 7 on the clock and I have the ball? Fine. 3 dribbles, a drive, some kind of turnaround nonsense that's going in because I was once one of the best post scorers in basketball. And it's just like, what are you supposed to do with that? And so I certainly get the age concerns, and I do have an age-related question to get to shortly about this group. But to Steve's point about them being able to kind of manage minutes, it does help to just have a bunch of these dudes. So you can go the maintenance route with a little bit more comfort. And all this is said, we haven't mentioned the name of Bogdanović yet. It was just quietly pretty important for them in the second half of last year with his shooting and playmaking. So, like, you just have a bunch of options in addition to the core, as Steve already mentioned. Yeah, I think the second unit is going to be very good. Go ahead.
Well, I was just about to say, before you get to your next question or next portion, this may be historic. This may be the first time that Nekias Duncan has believed in the Los Angeles Clippers. And this may also be the first time that Nekias Duncan has believed in a roster that has this much age on it. We did it, folks. This is peak dunker spot.
Just know I'm pushing back in my head. But biggest question mark for me with this Clippers group, and maybe this is just my lifelong trauma watching the Miami Heat. But as excited as I am about this group, the first question that I had, like aside from health, because health is a prevalent question for all 30 teams, right? What happens when they play a fast team? What is the collective athleticism of this group and how do they deal with teams that just want to push the pace? Like that first Clippers-Pacers game, even without Tyrese Halliburton, I'm going to be like, ooh. That first Clippers-Bulls game, and this is, again, I think they are better than the Pacers. I think they are better than the Bulls. But if we're just talking about regular season, random Tuesday, styles clash, am I going to be surprised if I turn on League Pass and the awesome Clippers broadcast and Ty Lue is shaking his head, calling the timeout because the Bulls are up 11-2 with 9:18 left in the first quarter? Not really. Because I do wonder just how they're going to deal with that aspect of it. And so, like, I'm keeping an eye on that. Go ahead, jump in, Steve.
I thought we were going to get out of this segment without you calling them old, but it's okay. Not crash the glass would be my answer. You're going to see James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, if they did not take the shot, already in the backcourt.
Well, you know, James will trot back, but
you
know.
Okay.
Got him. Right. Okay, but not too much. I am worried about that. And then, Steve, I want to pose a question to you. Very Nekias coded. If we get to January, we get to the All-Star break, insert point here, right? If Ivica Zubac is just firmly the second best player on this team, is that a good thing or an omen for the Clippers?
Oh, you're not going to like my answer. It's a bad thing.
Okay.
It's not a good thing. If he's performing as the second best player, or you feel like he's improved to that where you could make that argument, that is a positive. If it is very clear that he is outperforming one of their top two players, that's not a great sign, because that means one of those two top guys is not playing well. Okay. Now, if you're going to sprinkle some oregano and efficiency on the Zubac thing and talk, we can talk about it. That's fine. But if one of those two is outright just not cooking, that's not a good sign for the Clippers. Now, they have enough depth to be able to kind of be like, hey, come sit down for a little bit. But if you're telling me either of those guys take a step back, that's concerning for me. But I think for me, it's set up well for Kawhi Leonard and James Harden. And it kind of ties into something I've thought about. Like, how often can they hit the high notes during the regular season? Is this a team that is built to kind of get through it and improve and get good? And then if they get good, are they going to maintain it and keep going, or are they going to fall backwards? Like, are they more built for the playoffs than the regular season? That might not be the first time I say that in this episode.
if you are a long-term listener of the Dunker Spot, this is not the first time you've heard Steve say this, period. So there you go. But yeah, to be clear, like, that was very open-ended for me, because I do think, especially depending on what you prioritize, like, you could argue Zubats was, like, number two impact-wise for the Clippers last year, especially once you factor in the games played for Kawhi, et cetera. So it's... I just kind of wonder within that what kind of steps we see from Zubats. Like, one of the quieter storylines was Zubats coming in a little bit smaller training camp. Everyone, you know, 15 pounds of muscle or best shape of their life, et cetera. He did come in a little bit smaller. So I was like, ooh, are they going to switch him more this year? Like, what does that look like? And so I'm just kind of keeping an eye on, does he take another step as a post scorer? Because as you noted, I think he was just good in the post last year, period. Numbers bear that out. But a lot of that efficiency was, ooh, this is a smaller player he's putting underneath the basket. Is it going to be more efficiency against like-sized bodies? Again, there was still a fair bit of that. Not saying that didn't happen last year. But if he takes a step there, does he start seeing two more consistently? Do we get another step for him as a passer, which was one of his quieter growth areas last year as well? And the defense is already – he's already an elite defender, in my opinion. So, like, does he actually take that step to, you know, kind of cute all-star name to toss into the conversation to he is an all-star flat out, he's here now?
I think him coming down in better shape is interesting to me because he's good defensively. Can he be more active? Is his footwork better? Mm-hmm. Can he kind of show and recover a little bit more, mix in some more switching? And the roles have felt a little bit better as far as him being able to get out on some of those high pick and rolls, yeah, and get to that pocket and get to that free throw line area. So is it just overall improvement in those areas on top of what he's built?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Okay, Steve. Who's your breakout candidate or X factor?
The X factor for me with this team is Bradley Beal. How good of a Bradley Beal can the Los Angeles Clippers get? Is he going to be the real deal Bradley Beal? Are we getting Bradley real? Is that returning? Because I think one of the things is Bradley Beal went to Phoenix. That happened. And then Bradley Beal became Bradley Beal's contract. He's no longer Bradley Beal's contract. And he's playing for the Los Angeles Clippers in a context that should help him. I think the Clippers have done a great job of saying, hey, remember that all that time you used to spend off the ball running off screens? Can you do that? Hey, man, remember when you played defense? Can you do that again as well? Appreciate you. And so I think it's people kind of forget Bradley Beal's a hell of a basketball player. Mm-hmm. And so if he can get back to that in this context, buddy, what are you going to do?
I have felt like a crazy person the last 2 or 3 years when I'd randomly reference, like, hey, you know, in Washington, you got to go all the way back to the John Wall days, which I think is part of the problem. I was like, he was just kind of solid as a defender on top of the scoring stuff. Like, this is a thing that we got to see on the basketball court before. Obviously, different stage of his career now. And even going back to the end of the Phoenix tenure, he just scored incredibly efficiently for them, and it just did not matter because of the defense, and he has to take ownership of that. And also, to your point, he was the contract instead of the player. And so, more consistent effort defensively. It sounds like Ty Lue is certainly going to challenge him on that end and give him some assignments that he probably shouldn't have with some of the personnel that the Clippers have. But, like, as a way to, nah, you got to do this, big dog. I'm excited to see what engaged, empowered, motivated Bradley Beal looks like in this context. I'm right there with you, Steve. I think for me, John Collins is probably the big one, figuratively and literally. The roles, I think, are going to be there. And if the Clippers do see switching, it helps that he's going to be playing alongside Chris Paul and or James Harden. They could just hit him with slips again, take him back to like the Trae Young days in Atlanta. So he should have those. The three-point shooting, I think it's fair to just say he is a good shooter at this point. Like, he has grown the shot enough over the past few seasons, and the percentages kind of bear that out. I think he is just a solid pop threat at this point. That's going to be there. Defensively, how well does he hold up in space? I do have a secondary, how often will we actually see him at the five, considering they have Zubats and Brook Lopez? Like, is that going to be more of a Zoo's naturally starting, but Brook Lopez is getting a maintenance day, so now we can actually lean into some Collins at the five in this matchup against Charlotte or something. Cool. How does he hold up there? And as far as like secondary guys, I know the defense for Chris Dunn's going to be there. He's going to defend it at all defense level in low minutes. I know Derrick Jones Jr. is going to defend his tail off. What is the three-point percentage for either? Because teams are going to play them with gaps. Teams are going to sprinkle in their centers, quote-unquote, guarding them when they're on the floor sometimes. Would they hit enough shots? If they hit that accentuates the lineup versatility and the things they could tap into. Steve, what do you think the best Clipper lineup is going to be?
Well, before I get to that, I did want to touch on the John Collins of it all, because I feel like watching the preseason, it's like this fit feels even better than I thought it would. Mm-hmm. Especially him and Brook both being able to do similar things in different ways, where it's like, okay, whichever one you think is not going to be the roller will now be the roller, and the other one's going to space. And John Collins as a roller always becomes a much better player,
yeah,
in my eyes. And so being able to get him in those positions without us having to say John Collins has to play the five for this team for it to work, mm-hmm, feels like a positive for both sides. So I think that's the win of it all. Now, what lineup do I most want to see from the Los Angeles Clippers? We'll get to that in a second. The lineup that I think will unlock a lot of things for the Los Angeles Clippers. Give me James Harden, Bradley Beal, Kawhi Leonard, Nick Batum, and Zubac.
Ooh. Okay. I like it. I like it. Steve, this may shock you. I think the Clippers starting lineup, however it unfolds, is going to be an elite group. I think their best performing lineup is going to be some variation of their second unit. I went Chris Paul, Chris Dunn, Nicholas Batum, John Collins, Brook Lopez. Fantastic. I think when you do your minimum of 150 minutes or minimum 200 possessions, whatever filtering you want to do, I think that grouping is going to be the best for the Clippers this year. I think they're going to blitz second units this year. As far as the lineup that I most want to see, James Harden, Bradley Beal, Chris Dunn, Derrick Jones Jr., Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if we ever see it in a regular season game, and if we do, it's probably going to be like a total of 8 minutes. But that feels like a lot of defense around the stars. Secondary creation and Bradley Beal on top of that. Like, I would like to see that group at some point. And I have a secondary one, but I'll let you rock. What's the lineup that you most want to see?
The lineup that I most want to see? The unction.
The unction.
Chris Paul, James Harden, Bradley Beal, Kawhi Leonard, Brook Lopez. Let me see it. Give it to me. I want to see it.
the darn unction. The second one that I had, I guess, is unction adjacent. Chris Paul, Bradley Beal, Chris Dunn, Derrick Jones Jr., Nicholas Batum, the actual like small ball five option for the last few seasons for the Clippers. So that would be it for me there. We are going to take a quick break. And once we return, we will talk about the Golden State Warriors. And we are back, continuing our Pacific Division preview. It is now time to talk about the Golden State Warriors, coming off of a 48-34 season. They were 16th in offense, 7th in defense, 10th in net rating. This is going to be the first full season, Steve, of the Jimmy Butler experience in Golden State. So excited to see how that mind meld works. For me, though, one, the obvious, Steph Curry is still playing basketball, and he's still one of the best players in basketball. He's one of the greatest players in NBA history. Duh, I want to watch him play basketball. Beyond that, I'm kind of intrigued by the others. I think that's kind of where I'll start. Because I think there's been so much bridge talk and set two timelines talk, and a lot of that has been centered around Jonathan Kuminga, and I have Kuminga thoughts as well a little bit later. But Brandon Podziemski, you have yet another opportunity to take a leap. Moses Moody, you have yet another opportunity to take a leap. Quentin Post kind of came out of nowhere, became a rotation piece for this Warriors group. And if there's going to be any sort of maintenance done with Draymond Green or Al Horford, we're going to get to see more screening and three-point shooting and hopefully competent drop defense from Quentin Post. Like, that could be interesting. And if Post doesn't do the job, Trayce Jackson-Davis, welcome back. Like we saw towards the tail end of their series against Houston, et cetera. They have a lot of young guys that have, I think, defined skill sets that we have seen flashes of. This is what it looks like when it hits. Across an 82-game season, at the very least, kind of needs to provide some positive impact to help get the Warriors to the point where it is now playoff Steph, playoff Jimmy, playoff Draymond, playoff Al Horford. I'm excited to see what those young guys do with this opportunity.
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Because you mentioned getting to the height of the playoff performers they have. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like they have a cleaner path with this team to produce consistently, or do you still feel like it's uneven for them?
The boring answer is that it feels more defined for some, but uneven for others. Like, I think Jonathan Kuminga is naturally the one where it's like, what is this going to look like? To spoil my biggest question, what is this going to look like for Kuminga? Because there is one train of thought for me where it's like, okay, cool. If you slide him in between Steph and Jimmy in the backcourt, if you want to call it that, between Draymond Green and Al Horford, they can space their bigs because they're really good passers. You can invert the floor. Kuminga has more driving space, more cutting space, more quick duck in space. Steph's going to draw a natural amount of attention. Jimmy's a really good passer. He's also a good off-ball mover. This is a context that works for Kuminga. There's also the other state of mind where it's like, if he doesn't shoot, teams are going to guard him a certain way. He's not going to have the same opportunities. Defensive consistency has been a question for him, and he's not going to get the same rope. And so I don't know which side of the coin that's going to land on. For someone like Pods, I think it is pretty straightforward. How many threes are you going to hit? Because he's going to keep the ball moving. He's going to cut. He's going to screen. He's going to take an ungodly amount of charges. And I think on certain nights, he's going to take on, you know, perimeter option number one defensively, if for no other reason than to make sure Jimmy doesn't have to do it in November. But also, we can unlock off-ball Jimmy. I think for him, it's pretty set in stone. Like, this is what you're going to be asked to do. For the bigs, it's going to be pretty set in stone. Moody and Kuminga, and to a lesser extent, Moody, is where it's like, I don't know how quickly they find their rhythm within this.
See, in my gut feeling watching, it feels like they either have a better understanding of what their job is, or it's a lot more clear what their job is, and do this. Mm-hmm. Execute these things, and anything you do on top of that, we will take as a bonus.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where my mindset is going to the season as far as before. It was like, can they elevate this team? I don't know if they have to elevate this team. I just think they have to do their job every day. Mm-hmm. Boring answer, but I think that's kind of the feel I have from their youngsters. And that leads to me what I want to see. I want to watch Stephen Curry, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, and Al Horford play basketball together, which is why I personally am feeling less... I'm questioning the youth less because I get to watch those four more. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, man, Al Horford's immediate impact on the defensive end in that first preseason game brought me so much joy, Nikias. Now, obviously, he's not going to play heavy minutes. You got to get him to the postseason. You got to get your whole team to the postseason. But his ability to just be a big that they have not had as far as scheme versatility. Buddy, I can be at the level, and it might be a trap. It might be a switch. I might be a drop. You don't know. And in case you are confused by this, there is Draymond Green and or Jimmy Butler behind me at times. So, like, one of those two or two of them being actual, one on the weak side is a luxury that I think will help them down the line. And then there was a play in the preseason, though, I think it was against the Blazers. They were pressing Steph Curry, right? Mm-hmm. And so Draymond just walks towards midcourt. Jimmy Butler's like, cool, I'm going to screen for you because he's got Drew Holiday on him. Because he has Drew Holiday on him, that man slipped immediately and said, psych, I'm out. Steph, meanwhile, just throws it right to Draymond, who throws it right to a running Jimmy Butler, who drives and kicks it to Al Horford. I'm like, yes, I want to see the improv of these two. Because we know the type of music that Steph and Draymond made together. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Butler was like, cool, I can play too. And so we've seen them in screening action, baseline out of bound actions, screening for each other, cuts. Things open up. And Al's like, oh, this is what y'all doing? Mm-hmm. I can do this too. And so, you know, like, it's just like, it's odd to see. I've made all the jokes about the Warriors post splits, but it's like, oh, right. They can throw it in the post and set a post split for Al Horford as well, just because they can. And so, like, that's the fun of it for me. Yeah. I want to see how it looks like on both ends, especially the defensive end. Being able to see Jimmy and Draymond and Al just do things defensively excites me. So that's the meat of it for me.
I like that. And I'll ask you a quick question based on what you said there. Does this feel more like a Steve Kerr team to you? And if so, how much value will that have to their goal of let's win enough in the regular season to where we have a good enough bracket to make the run that we're capable of if we're healthy?
It feels like it has more of a base of people that he knows gets it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And because of that, he knows the other people will get it. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to worry about certain things on a nightly basis. Now, those could pop up. Never know. Mm-hmm. Each season is different. But going in, it's like, okay, we can take this off the table for a little bit. I don't have to coach this, this, and this. That'll be taken care of. Mm-hmm. We can just go and play. So I feel like that's an important piece of it.
Okay. I would ask you that one. What is your biggest question or questions heading into the year about the Warriors?
Well, how many lineups can they truly create? So I talked about the four that I want to see together plus one, but you're going to have to be able to mix and match. Mm-hmm. So are you going to play, you know, how much are you going to sprinkle in Draymond at the five? How much TJD or post do we see? Who does Kuminga play with? What's the Buddy Hield of it all? And so can you kind of get the combinations throughout the game, throughout the season, that kind of tie everything together? That's probably my biggest question, because, okay, who's your first sub? Who's your next sub? Are they executing at a high level? Does this now become this unit can't defend? So now we have to switch. You know what I mean? Like, there's room for this to get a little interesting early in the season, mm-hmm. but there's also room for it to get to be a positive. So I'm not out on everything. I just want to see what it looks like, what the attempts are. Because if you're telling me you got a second unit that comes in, obviously you're going to mix and match. You're always going to have talent on the floor. But you have energy coming from the second unit. They get out and run. They play a little bit different. Now you can blend people back in. That's fine.
Okay. I think I want to circle back to that too. But I think for me, which version of Jimmy Butler do we get offensively? What level of aggression do we get during the regular season? Because in the playoffs, you know he's going to ramp it up. But if you are getting into any kind of maintenance, et cetera, like, he is going to have to do more of the scoring piece. And so, like, what does that part look like there? Again, I've already talked about Jonathan Kuminga, so I don't want to do that again. And I think related to the question I posed to you about Steve Kerr and just tied to my general excitement level with the younger players, what is the level of grace this year in light of there being more vets that Steve Kerr can trust, theoretically, in light of the Western Conference being expected to once again be a bloodbath? Is it seven games before we're like, all right, cool, here's more, oh, Gary Payton II is now the first sub instead of Jonathan Kuminga? Like, I wonder, like, what that part's going to look like. Because tied back to Kuminga, he is trade eligible in January. So, like, if this doesn't work, guess what we're back at, Steve? More conversations about what they can move him for and what kind of vets they can get in the room, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So
it's basically Jonathan Kuminga for you. What would make you feel good about this Jonathan Kuminga campaign in Golden State?
Him playing defense consistently, first and foremost, because the tools are there. The effort level and the off-ball awareness has often not been. And that is disappointing to me as someone that wants him to succeed. If that pops, I think he just gets more leeway to figure out the offense stuff. And he is clearly a talented cutter and driver, and he just gives them an athletic pop that they need on this roster. So if he defends, defends and rebounds. I guess I have to add that in. Mm. But like, if he does those two things, it should be a pretty straightforward pathway to he is averaging at least 27 minutes a night. And if you're talking about like maybe Jimmy tweaks an ankle or he gets a maintenance day, he's not playing the second night of back-to-backs, or Draymond's out. Actually, can I toss out a secondary question? Something that's kind of been back in my head the last 2-3 days as I was prepping for this.
Sure.
What happens if this year is the year that Draymond is like a B+, A- defender?
We'll hear about it on the podcast.
That is a tremendous shot, and I am going to leave that there for the interest of the podcast. Steve, who are we? So yeah, Kuminga.
No. In all seriousness, I don't think that. What is a A-, B+, defensive year from Draymond Green look like? Is it just he's not as good at switches, can't keep the ball in front? Is it the weak side rotations go backwards? Like, I don't know what it means to a degree, because it's like, okay, which part of it is he just not going to be locked in off ball? Because I don't anticipate that. He can defend multiple positions, but is this like a certain position group that he just can't keep in front? Like, I guess that's more my mind is like, what is the concept behind Draymond takes a step back? Because he's the cornerstone of this defense. Mm-hmm. So if he regresses in that area, it's not good for Golden State. But I feel like I don't think that's going to happen. And the most important thing is for him to just stay on the court. On the court. Stay on the court, please.
It feels like this is the exact opposite of the... Actually, I can't make that joke. But I think to answer your question, the Draymond portion, I guess regression looks like, you remember like the super heavy suspension year where it was just like, hey, what are you doing? And then he was on the court and then there were just weird defensive lapses and he was kind of getting beat on drives on top of it. It's like, okay, you tripping and then you're also not being yourself. What is this? If it's more of the defense part, which again, I think that would be more perimeter based. Like, what do these switches look like? It's like, oh no.
Okay.
He trying to pounce, do the quick lunge, and then, oh, top foot's up. We're out of there. Oh no. That's what it look like. So again, like, I expect Draymond to put together another all defense caliber season, to be clear. But if he's more in the group of the second team candidates instead of fighting for first slash deep court consideration, I do wonder what that means. As you mentioned, he is the shepherd of this defense. Like, he makes this work. So I'm curious, because this is still not the biggest group collectively. Like, he does a lot of heavy lifting. So just wanted to see what you thought about that, was thought about on that front. So Steve, who are your X factors?
I went back and forth with a few players, and I landed on Moses Moody.
Steve Kirk, because
I feel
got him. Heckin' got him.
Okay. But I feel like with Moses Moody, he's someone who can give them a pop, can do his job defensively, pressure the ball. And it feels like he's taken away some of that. Do you remember the first Moses Moody run where I was like, hey man, they can't afford for you to make these mistakes at this specific time?
Yes.
You kind of need to sit down. They were like, why isn't he playing? Because when they comes in the second unit, he turns it over and they're down two now. But I feel like he has a greater comfort within it. And so he can give them those shots and get downhill and fit in with the group without necessarily taking things away. So I think that's the person where I think if he just becomes a consistent presence for the Warriors, a lot of the other dominoes will fall.
Okay. All right. Well, we've talked Kuminga. I also had Moody in my notes. I've talked a little bit about Brandon Podziemski. I will use this as the Buddy Hield section.
Oh, my.
Because I think... One, I feel like the Buddy season has just gone under the radar. It just once again shot the leather off the ball. I personally was impressed by the defensive effort level from Buddy Hield.
Very pointed statement and sentence and phrase in a very specific way. I salute you.
Correct. I did not worry about his compete level at all defensively. I did worry about some of the matchups that he had to take on and the results of some of those matchups. Mm. But that brother fought. And, like, I feel like I've been talking about this since, like, the indie days and things. But, like, there is just an underrated level of playmaking that he has whenever he does see two coming off of a screen or early pick and roll or whatever the case may be. Like, he just feels like a very important piece of this rotation, especially if he does hold up enough defensively, because he can help grease the wheels with the splits and the general off-ball actions and the relocations that he can slide into. And I think when Steph's off the floor, he is going to be a very important piece of lineups, because he can help maintain some of that shooting and some of that off-ball gravity. So they kind of need Buddy to be good. As a side note, I've enjoyed some of the Jimmy Butler, Buddy Hield banter that's kind of popped up this offseason in the training camp and stuff. So that's part fun. So I would imagine we'll get to see a good bit of those two together in some hybrid lineups. But yeah, they kind of need Buddy to be good. So there we go. Steve, what do you think Golden State's best lineup is going to be?
I did not look at net ratings and do not judge that as a basis for what I think the best performing lineup will be. The lineup that I think will make the Golden State Warriors very tough to defend, cause coaches some headaches in meetings, is this one as follows. Stephen Curry, Buddy Hield, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Al Horford. I think that really makes the Golden State Warriors a tough team if that lineup is out there on the court together. Nikias, what do you think is the best lineup for the Warriors?
Well, Steve, as I do try to look at net ratings and things to try to get a baseline on what types of lineups generally work for these groups to help inform what I think, you know, try to project forward a little bit. I think the best lineup for the Golden State Warriors is going to be Stephen Curry, Brandon Podziemski, Buddy Hield, Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green. I think that's going to be more of a closing of the half slash closing of the fourth quarter lineup, especially if, as mentioned earlier, if Buddy is defending well enough and holding up enough, that is a lot of shooting. That's a lot of off-ball movement. That's still a good bit of defense with Jimmy and Dre. They can fly around. That is the group that I think is going to perform well, because historically, smaller lineups for the Golden State Warriors have done well.
I respect it. I'm sure it's going to have a great plus-minus in whatever you folks enjoy out there.
You folks!
For me, it looks like three people will be put in action a lot of times in that lineup.
They had to guard him on the other end, Steve. A plus 10 can be a 120 offensive rating and a 110 defensive rating. It could be a 140 offensive rating and a 130 defensive rating. We winning those minutes, baby. We're winning those minutes.
Man, get these numbers out of here. Y'all keep talking about best lineups and plus minus. They played the Wizards 7 times.
And they won those minutes, baby.
You're shameless. All you stat heads are shameless. I said it. I'm 38. I can get this off now.
Well, Steve, what is the lineup you most want to see from the Golden State Warriors?
Rip the Band-Aid off. Steph Curry, Jonathan Kuminga, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Al Horford. Play it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Let's see what it looks like. Rip it off.
Okay. For me, Steph Curry, Brandon Pajemski, Jonathan Kuminga, Gary Payton II, and Al Horford. Get some GP2 at the 4. It's generally been a good thing for the Golden State Warriors. Al Horford, more size at the 5, some spacing elements, some playmaking, et cetera. I like it. I think I like it. Also, Jonathan Kuminga, please score the basketball. You are the number 2 scoring option in this lineup. So get your buckets, get your drives. It's now time, Steve, to talk about the Sacramento Kings, who have
I've been waiting for this, man. I've been waiting for this, folks. This is the part that I've been waiting to see what Nekias Duncan is going to say about the Sacramento Kings. I can't wait. Come on.
Well, first, the Kings are coming off of a 40-42 season. They were 7th in offense, 22nd in defense, 15th in net rating, Steve. And it should come as no surprise that the thing that I am most excited about with this year's Sacramento Kings are the non-stars. Keegan Murray, get well soon. Keon Ellis, who continues to defend his tail off and shoots a little bit on top of that. Some interesting reps with the ball in his hands. Neat Clifford, hello. Hello.
Neat Clifford, 45 seconds. Hello.
Brother, have you seen the passes that he put on film during preseason? Have you seen those ball screens from Neat Clifford? Do you see how quickly he maps out the floor? Absolutely, I'm mentioning Neat Clifford this early into the Sacramento Kings section. I am excited to see what kind of runway we get from those guys. And Keegan Murray, get well soon. Also, just got paid. They're going to need his three-point shooting. They are certainly going to need his defense as part of the starting lineup. What areas of growth do we see from him on the ball, offensively or defensively? Again, I think he has turned himself into quite the defender, lowest of keys in Sacramento. What does that look like? Again, I have no questions about the Keon defense. Just what steps does he take offensively? And just what kind of playing time does Neat Clifford get? Because I think you need to fully explore what he is. Because that he already looks like someone that should not have made it to the Kings pick. I will put it that way. But that's where the excitement level starts with me. And I'll quickly toss in a full year of LaVine plus the bonus is going to be interesting. Zach LaVine is a really good off-ball mover. Just a really good scorer, period. But that passing for Sabonis, that screening in particular for Sabonis, you give LaVine any kind of advantage, he can get to the basket. And so, like, those two playing together, it's going to be quite a bit of fun for me. What excites you about this Kings team, Steve?
Well, I was going to ask you before you said LaVine Sabonis, what excites you about the stars, but you did get to it. So, well done. What excites me about this season for the Kings? How are they going to make this work?
Straight to a question.
Yeah. I'm going right to a question because here's the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was excited to see another year of Domantas Sabonis, who always produces and I think should have some more respect put on his name. You have Zach LaVine, their two-man game has grown, and I think getting him more handoffs, getting him downhill is a positive thing. Dennis Schroeder can get in the paint, will try to get in the paint, and so he also gives him someone else who can get a paint touch and maybe help get the defense in rotation. DeMar DeRozan, elite bucket getter, mid-range maker.
Sabonis.
The problem is no Sabonis. And now I'm left with, hey, what are we going to try and do here offensively? Are we going to try and have Dario Saric and Drew Eubanks do dribble handoff things?
I mean, Saric could do it. Eubanks can screen at the very least.
All right. I guess for me, it's just Zach LaVine, full context. What's this year look like for him? Dennis Schroeder, this is what you wanted again. What's this look like for you?
Mm-hmm.
And then can teams figure out what they want to do with DeMar when he gets to his spots? And so I think there is a basis of talent here. I need, like, it's not like we have the baked in, the Kings are going to run X, Y, and Z, because this is now Mr. Christie's first full year. So it's like, There's an air of mystery in my eyes, and I so badly want to believe that the beam will light up.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. Like, I think that's, to bounce off of that, that's probably the thing that's kind of thrown me off the most about the Kings. It's like, it's hard to argue that they don't have talent on this roster. Like, Sabonis has just been all NBA level for multiple years in a row at this point. DeMar is still very good. Zach LaVine's still very good. Keegan's been good for them. Dennis Schroeder has popped in different spots. Again, we are now dealing with another year one of new contract context for Dennis Schroeder, so we will see. But, like, they do just have talent. I can't say that they are just actively bad. But the mix does feel odd. So I do echo your what is this going to look like question as we flow into the biggest questions. And more pointedly, what is this defense going to look like? What are they going to do defensively, especially with Keegan Murray missing the early portion of the season at this point? That's a lot on the shoulders of Keon Ellis, who is a darn good defender. But, like, it would be a little bit easier if Keon Ellis was, like, 6'8". He's not. And so, like, that is still, he's probably defending your number ones. Who's defending your number twos? Like, as we saw in Brooklyn and in other spots, like, Dennis Schroeder can do some of the full court pressure thing, but, like, I still wouldn't call him, like, a B-plus level on-ball defender overall. He is fast and pesky, but he can still get beat. He can still get beat, right? So, like, if those are going to be your two best defenders in the starting lineup, it feels kind of perilous in comparison to some of these teams that they're going to be facing. And so what level can you get this defense to? Like, I know that is a question I've repeated for a few teams through these previews, but, like, for the Kings in particular, you have to get to a level defensively to where, all right, we're okay. Because if you can get stops, it is Dennis Schroeder running. It is Zach LaVine in transition. It is DeMar DeRozan, like, semi-trailer, and then he can just kind of flow into his own bag. It is, okay, cool. Domantas Sabonis trailing. He may shoot a three. He may flow into a handoff. He may pitch and flow into a pick and roll. Like, they have early offense stuff that they can get to. They got to get enough stops for it to matter. And I don't know if they're going to get enough stops for this to matter. I have questions about this. I can see how it works, but I don't know how comfortable I am betting that it works. I don't bet anyway, but, like, yeah.
It's interesting because for me, it's the offense. I could believe in the Kings being able to find enough defense if I know the offense is going to hit at a certain high level. That has been kind of the Kings' quandary for a little bit here. Mm-hmm. I feel like teams are going to be like, you know what, Dennis Schroeder, we're packing the paint. Go ahead and kick it, buddy. Oh, DeMar, you're posting up. Cool. This is a double team or very aggressive early help. Oh, DeMontis Sabonis, you're more willing to take threes and you had a decent three-point shooting. Prove it. Hey, Zach LaVine, it looks like you're driving and finishing well. Here's another body in the paint. And so for me, it's can they find the spacing? Can they find the consistency offensively to be able to now manage defensively? Mm-hmm. So that's my concern. Because if the offense is just if it's a lukewarm chai latte, then that's not going to be great for the Sacramento Kings, right?
Actually, based on that, Steve, do we think we just see Sabonis on the perimeter more this year by virtue of that? Like, he already does a lot of the passing stuff from the high post and above the three-point line, but in order to manufacture some spacing for LaVine, for DeRozan, do we think he's just naturally on the perimeter more and maybe that goads him into more of these three-point attempts, et cetera?
I think so. I think I think more space, a few more pops. Wouldn't be surprised.
I got you. other question that I have, what level of consistency do we get from Russell Westbrook and Dennis Schroeder? I already talked about Dennis a little bit, but Russell is the new recent addition on this team. We did say on the last pod, like, hey, we're going to get here to the Russ talk. So actually, I'll toss it to you, Steve. How do you feel about the Russell Westbrook selection? How do you think he slots in with this particular roster?
Russell Westbrook is my X factor.
There we go.
Russell Westbrook is going to compete at a high level. Why not? Russell Westbrook will have at least four games where he gets the golden once in a rocking on his own. I'm excited to see the drives. Use him as a screener. Let's see what it looks like. Let's let Russ be Russ. Why not?
Okay. Famous last words. No, I feel you on that. The other question I had, Steve, based on this offseason and related to the Russell Westbrook signing. So where does Malik Monk fit into this exactly?
Bucket getting.
How many? Because it just feels very clear that they just do not want him there because of that contract or other things that have not been unearthed yet, at the very least. Is he?
Hey, I tell you, who do want some out there? Doug Christie.
I'm just like, hey, man, what is this about to look like from Malik Monk? Because I do think he's just good. And I would imagine if the Kings decide we need to make some kind of moves before the deadline or December 15th hits or whatever, I'm sure his name's going to pop up once again and things. I just wonder what the early portion of the season from Malik Monk's going to look like. Because I think the shooting, to your point, the overall spacing question that you have, Malik could certainly help on that front when he's on the floor. He could also add a level of secondary playmaking. We've seen the steps he's taken in Sacramento. Just want to see him. So,
Makes sense. Speaking of seeing, let us see your X factor for the Sacramento Kings, Nikias.
Yeah. So starts with Keegan Murray for me. Big dog, you're going to play. Gosh darn it. Look, when he returns, Keegan Murray factors in as a very important player for the Sacramento Kings, both in the short term, big four that can defend and shoot threes, also in the long term. Because if we were just talking about how the Kings project forward the next 2-3 years, I think him and Nick Clifford are kind of the selling points for, hey, we can bridge to something else. Because these guys are young and good now, and they're going to be even better in the future. They need Keegan Murray to pop. If Keegan settles in as like a 36% three-point shooter and good defender, that is still a valuable basketball player, but it kind of dims the hope a little bit with the future projection with Sacramento. So, but they are absolutely going to need him. Again, in the immediate future, the shooting is just going to be massively important for this group because they need all the spacing they can get around what's projected to be their starting lineup. So Keegan for me, Dennis Schroeder again, drives, ball pressure, playmaking. He's going to have to knock down some pull-ups because, as you mentioned, Steve, teams are going to go under against him. He's going to see some switches. Those are probably my two.
Okay.
What say you?
Well, I already said Russell Westbrook, so I will flow into what I believe to be the lineup that could cause defenses issues or coaches stress if the Sacramento Kings employ it or deploy it. Malik Monk, Keon Ellis, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, DeMontis Sabonis. That's a tough lineup to deal with.
Okay. Best lineup for me, I think, is going to be Dennis Schroeder, Keon Ellis, Zach LaVine, Keegan Murray, DeMontis Sabonis.
Fantastic. Yeah. I will now flow into the lineup that I want to see the most for the Sacramento Kings. That would be Russell Westbrook, Malik Monk, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and DeMontis Sabonis.
Okay.
I think that's fun. I think you have a lot of offense out there at the same time.
This is an unbelievable bit. The lineup that I most want to see, Steve, Keon Ellis, Neat Clifford, Zach LaVine, Keegan Murray, DeMontis Sabonis. Let's get some spacing out there. Let's put the ball in the hands of DeMontis Sabonis. Naturally, a lot of offense is going to flow through him. Let's put the ball in the hands of Neat Clifford. Let him make some decisions. Zach LaVine can do it too. Naturally, he's going to score quite a bit. But that's probably the group that I want to see. Get the young guys out there with the stars. They can space a little bit. And let's have some gosh darn fun.
Speaking of fun, we can have fun talking about the Phoenix Suns.
What a bar. We love rhyming on the Dunker Spot podcast. But okay, closing out the Pacific Division. The Phoenix Suns coming off of a 36-46 season. They were 13th in offense, 27th in defense, 23rd in net rating. Lots of change to the roster, namely Kevin Durant no longer there, Bradley Beal no longer there. Talked about him in the Clippers segment. But the excitement level for me, Steve, with the Suns group being a relatively new group, the stakes are much lower than the y'all got a big three, y'all better win or else kind of edict. I just want to learn more about Jordan Ott and what he wants the vision for this Phoenix Suns team to be. Quick shout out to our dear pal and friend of the program, Stephen Gardner-Prigent, who's been talking a lot to Jordan Ott. We've learned about the offensive rebounding philosophy, what he wants to do defensively, the importance of different screening. It's a lot of different, you know, some little things to nerd out on. I appreciate that. But just in general, okay, what is your ideal offense? What is your ideal pace? What do you want to do defensively? Preseason, we have seen a ton of early ball pressure and activity defensively. How much does that carry over? We'll see. But at least conceptually, this is the kind of pressure that he wants to put on opposing offenses. So using this season as a learning period about him and some of the younger players on the Suns roster intrigues me quite a bit. Are you excited about with the Suns group, Steve?
To bounce off your point, it's going to be a learning experience on both sides. And so it's going to be interesting to see what he starts with vision-wise and where he ends up with as the season progresses, as teams treat them a certain way, as certain things work and certain things don't. That's always kind of the fun of a first-year coach to kind of watch that journey unfold. I think for me, It's the defense. I think one of the things that stood out to me in the preseason was, okay, if we're going to have Dylan Brooks, we can kind of establish a little of a culture there. It's going to take some time. But now we have Dylan Brooks and Ryan Dunn with full court pressure. And, hey, Grayson Allen's joining them. And, okay, there's some activity here. There's some juice here. That's kind of a decent base to be an annoying team in the Western Conference. So I want to see what the defense looks like. And then offensively, mm-hmm. how much pace, tempo, movement can we get? What are you trying to build it out of? A lot of guard actions, a lot of mm-hmm. wings cleared, a lot of cutting when there's a pick and roll or a drive, cutting from the corner, fill the corner, that kind of thing. So how much of that just kind of makes them a team that, okay, we may, quote unquote, be better than them. This isn't necessarily a fun matchup. We're not exactly having the best time because you still have to defend Devin Booker. And that's a guy you can use in many different ways. Like, it doesn't matter who's coaching there. Devin Booker will be on the block or under the basket and come off the screen, going a direction that's going to force you to chase, and that puts pressure on you. And mm-hmm. now he's guard screens. He's a screener. So it's just a lot of open-endedness, I think, for this team to kind of grow throughout the year.
Hmm. Can I make a cross-league comparison?
Sure.
Does this not kind of feel like, at least in terms of the play style, at the very least, and some of the spacing principles that you've already alluded to and what we've seen in the preseason so far, does this kind of feel like the Mercury?
There is one significant different deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, DeMarcus are just better. But, like, yeah, I don't think, you know, Devin Booker and Alyssa Thomas are very different players on top of
yeah.
that. But, like, I'm just thinking, like, just how they want to space before they get into their actions, the full court pressure, all the guard elements they can get into. Like, that's like, it feels kind of like either Valkyries or Mercury-like in terms of their concept so far. I wanted to bounce that off of you. and I think related to that, to the Jordan Ive et al., you already mentioned the offense and how different it's going to look. Like, we are just going to see, like, Point Book in a real way. And he has long been a very good passer. Like, you go back to the early Sun stint where that team was just awful and they kind of put the ball in his hands. It's like, okay, they're losing 50 to 60 games, but the pick and roll reads for Devin Booker are quietly getting better. And then you put Ricky Rubio aside and it's like, oh, right. He can score efficiently and he can play make. And then you put Chris Paul alongside him. It's like, oh, right. He can score efficiently and play make. And so now all those years of stacking those on-ball reps, he's going to have the ball in his hands more this year. I'm excited to see what that looks like. Is 28-5-8 going to surprise me from Devin Booker this year? Like, probably not. I think he can put that together. Don't know what that means for the Suns, but, like, yeah, man.
Is Devin Booker an all-star this year?
Tentatively, I'll say yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
I got him on the record. Devin Booker.
Okay. Dakota, save that for me. Thank you. let's see. Did you have any questions about the Suns?
Yes. I think for me, it's who's going to emerge in the big room. This is naturally going to be a big season for Mark Williams. Will you stay healthy? If you stay healthy, what is that defense going to look like, big dog? We've seen good stuff in the drop, you know, going back to Charlotte, et cetera. We've seen good stuff in the drop. We've also seen, hey, you too big to be in this drop and not affect anything. We've seen a little bit at the level, seen some activity so far. In Phoenix, it's like, you got to nail this. We need for you to help anchor the center position. It's quietly been some good stuff for Nick Richards. I know I've had a lot of opinions about Nick Richards throughout the history of this podcast. It went from, hey, this guy is just kind of good. In Charlotte, this is cool. He's screening. He's defending. And then the defense went backwards. And I was like, oh, no. And then he was traded to Phoenix. And the defense kind of stayed backwards. It's felt better. However much stock you want to put in the preseason. Can he parlay that into a good season? Come on, Maluaj. That brother is massive. Can put the ball on the floor a little bit. The defense really intrigues me. What level of consistency will we see from him in year one? Like, I just kind of want to see who can anchor things to some level for Phoenix this year.
I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get yelled at by a Suns fan. They need it to be man-man, and they need it to be Oso. They need those two to cook this year. They need those two to be the answer. No offense to the Charlotte Hornets and their big affiliation, but I think it's going to be those two for the Phoenix Suns.
Okay, but I wouldn't be upset with that. Also, it was just kind of fun when he actually got minutes last year. So, like, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing more of him. It would certainly factor into, like, the activity and pressure that they want to get into defensively. So,
look, if he gets minutes, I can already picture you on a Saturday watching the tape and being like, oh, my God, the defense. Oh, they inverted the offense for him. Oh, my. I can already see it.
Hey, you know your podcast co-host. What are your questions for this Phoenix group?
I mean, I think the big of it all is pretty interesting. I think it's just overall, what are they, how do they develop throughout the season?
Yeah.
Kind of just what I'm excited about, but like, that's it for me. This is a year where you have to set what's going to be the next standard for the Phoenix Sun. And so, okay, what's their identity going to end up being by the end of the season? That's what I'm intrigued to see.
Okay. All right. Let's get into breakout candidates and X factors. For me, Steve, hi, Jalen Green. You're now in a new context. Are you ready to play more freely? How much will you factor into this defensive culture setting that Phoenix is trying to get into? But more so for the offense, what kind of driver are you going to be? What kind of passes will you be able to make consistently on the move? Will we finally see a higher volume of kickout passes versus some of the laydowns that you're more comfortable with? What is this pull-up going to look like, slash when do you get to it? Hey, we don't need you to be top scorer on elite team in the West right now. We just need you to be you. We need to figure out what you are within this context and how you can build forward and play off of Devin Booker, et cetera. Like, a more free Jalen Green, I would anticipate being a better Jalen Green, but let's see it. I think if you get some firm answers on him, that helps inform how you want to move going forward. And if he's just better, he's just part of your core moving forward. So I'll start with Jalen Green, Steve.
I'll stick there. He's not my X factor, but I do think Jalen Green is set up for success in Phoenix with a team that should play faster, should have more guard involvement, doesn't have the same type of, hey, we need you to do specifically this in the half court. And so we'll have more opportunities to kind of just get up and down. Remember, Houston, for everything they did in the half court, could grind to a halt. I don't think Phoenix will necessarily do that by default. So it should be fun to see him. My X factor, Ryan Dunn. Let's establish a base here, buddy. Mm-hmm. Let's get a foundation. Threes, are you going to make them? Are you going to keep taking them? Drives, will they be there? Are you driving closeouts? Can we see more of you as far as getting downhill with a handoff or a pick and roll? I would like to see that because I believe in the defense, but we need something on that end to stick.
So we can continue believing in the defense. you kind of need both in today's NBA. But okay, Steve, what do you think will be the Phoenix Suns' best lineup?
Unsure, but I sure can tell you what lineup I think is going to cause some issue for opposing coaches and teams during the regular season if they play with it. From my mind, I'm going to go with Devin Booker, Jalen Green. Let's go Ryan Dunn, Dylan Brooks, and Man. I think that's a fun lineup. What say you?
I'm ready to get yelled at, but I think the best lineup for the Phoenix Suns this season is not going to be their start lineup unless they have a whole bunch of injuries. But I think the five-man grouping of Devin Booker, Grayson Allen, shooting, screening, going to factor into the full court pressure. Dylan Brooks, shooting, certainly the defense. Royce O'Neal will hopefully get a bounce back season for him. And Nick Richards. I think that's going to be the best five. Veteran-led group, naturally. They're going to know how to play. But point Booker with some spacing, some different screening options, and enough size collectively defensively to switch a little bit, bring some pressure on top of that. That's what I'm looking at. Steve, what is the lineup you most want to see from the Phoenix Suns this year?
Let's get some dogs out there. Ooh. All right? Let's compete. Let's go Devin Booker. Let's go Grayson Allen. Let's go Ryan Dunn. Let's go Dylan Brooks. Let's go Oso.
Okay.
I wanted to put Royce O'Neal in a lineup very badly. But I failed.
Kind of surprising that I got to a Royce O'Neal inclusion in a lineup and you didn't. I figured that would have been flipped for this exercise. Lineup I most want to see, give me Colin Gillespie. Give me Jalen Green. Give me Devin Booker. Give me Ryan Dunn. Give me Malawach. Get the young guys out there with Book. Not like he's old, but you know what I mean. Let's get the rookie scale contract guys or lighter contracts out there with Devin Booker. Let's have some fun. And that concludes the Pacific Division preview, which also concludes our season preview overall with these divisions. Check out with prior episodes if you missed your favorite team, but we are done on that front. And when we return, Steve, it's time to get into a little award talk. All right, Steve, let's cap this out with some award talk. Some early thoughts on the big three of awards at the very least, MVP, DPOY, and Rookie of the Year. Let's start with MVP, since that is always a healthy conversation among the masses. We all express our different viewpoints, and we do so respectfully. Steve, Who are some of the early names that you're looking at for MVP? Who do you expect to be the major players in this race?
Well, MVP conversation is fun for me. And, you know, we do it a little differently around here as far as kind of building a bigger list to start and then kind of going from there, which, you know, it should be checkpoints throughout the season. I think you're going to have some staples. I think Jokic will be in there because Jokic is Jokic. I think Giannis will be in there because he's set up to have a big year based on how the Bucks have built their process. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander obviously will be there coming off the year that he had, and it appears he's gotten even better, which is a little bit scary. I think Luka will be in there. So I think those are four I pretty much have in pencil pretty strongly. Mm-hmm. And then it gets a little interesting because you start to think about, okay, there's going to be a Nick or Cav rep. So it's, once again, Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell. Mm-hmm. Anthony Edwards is on a complete mission. Mm-hmm. Do we see a Cade Cunningham? Do we see the Warriors or Rockets have a stretch so it's KD or Stephen Curry? How does that kind of get built out? Do the Clippers get a rep? So I think that's where it gets interesting. But I think those four I feel pretty solid about. Does Victor Wembanyama knock on the door of the MVP race?
Well, I think that's a pretty strong list to start, Steve. And I would just quickly say, on the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander front, he missed four shots in the preseason. Like, it's preseason play, so of course. But you talk about MVP, finals MVP, you come off this offseason and you're getting ready to go for the season, and you just almost literally don't miss. That seems like he's primed for another big year, so we'll see. I certainly don't think you should just immediately eliminate a back-to-back run for Shai, especially if the Thunder are as good as they should be and as good as I think they are. Like, they almost won 70 last year with their front court missing over 100 combined games. Like, if they're healthy, I just think 70's on the table for them again this year. So, another 30, three-point shooting, like, that gets fun. But, like, I'm with you. Like, I think the core is going to be there. Jokic, Shai, Giannis. I think Luka is going to factor into this one pretty heavily. I'm glad you brought up Cade Cunningham because I was thinking through dark horses, and like him and Trae Young were the first two names that I thought about. Because I think with Cade, and we talked about this during the Central Division preview, like I think the Pistons are just good. And I think a healthier Asar Thompson plus more Asar Thompson should just mean they're performing better and thus more wins. If they're just firmly like in the 3-6 range in terms of regular season wins, and Cade is once again at like 26-7-9 or something ridiculous, he's also coming off of a very strong preseason run. I don't think it's going to be a stretch to put Cade in that conversation, especially if he has an efficiency bump. That seems to be like the thing that kind of takes him a peg down for some of the top tier guys, because the box score stuff is going to be there. Like, we just want that true shooting above league average, et cetera, et cetera. But like, yeah, he's really good. The roster context is better around him, and they should just be better, period. So Cade's a good one. Trae Young, if the Hawks are good, that's just going to be 27-10. And if the defense is fine for him, that helps the Hawks be better, and thus they win enough, and thus let's talk about Trae Young in this Atlanta season. And in light of the question that I have about them, what does the non-trade creation look like when he goes to the bench? Like, that kind of lends itself to the Hawks are +9 with them on. They're -7 with them off. Here's this +16 overall that puts them in the range with some of these other MVP candidates. Like, you can have a lot of fun with that kind of thing. So I'm intrigued by the trade of it all. You mentioned Wimby at the end. How much do you think he actually factors into this? Like, do you think the Spurs can make a playoff push? Can they fight for a top six seed if they're healthy?
The Western Conference is very tough.
It is.
So it sounds very, you want to say, yeah, top six they could, but then you can very quickly name six very, very, very good teams in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay. But I think that is where his case opens up. If he has an outstanding year, what he does is loud on both ends of the floor. Mm-hmm. And the Spurs do end up having a top six, top five finish. Not saying that would just stamp it, but he will be knocking on the door if that happens. Yeah. And it's very clear that Victor's play elevated this team from there to this. Like, maybe top four would have to be in theory. Mm-hmm. But I could see someone making the case.
Yeah, like, I think if he's healthy enough, he's certainly going to be a heavy favorite for Defensive Player of the Year. We're not going to get there yet. But if you're telling me, hey, this is the best defender in basketball, plus he's averaging 25 because he now has downloaded the Hakeem Olajuwon footwork package, and the passing is still there, and that does get kind of funny. in terms of this conversation. And we are, you know, last year was obviously shortened due to the clock situation and stuff. But we do just have multiple years now of, all right, well, the Spurs rank here overall, but when Wimby's on the court, they are here. Like, you've certainly seen that on the defensive side where they've been middling overall, but they've consistently performed at a top five level with Wimby on the court. The impact stuff is going to be there. As you mentioned, the loud moments are going to be there. Oh, boy. Like, they win 47 games. That gets kind of funny. So I think it's worth keeping an eye on. Do you think there are going to be splits anywhere?
As far as?
Like, I think with...
Are you talking about two players in the same team?
Yes.
Potentially. But I feel like it would be minus two more than one in one. Okay. I feel like they would just pay the... Your unit is good tax, as opposed to we're picking Kawhi Leonard or James Harden, or we're picking Jalen Brunson or Kat, or we're picking Donovan Mitchell or Evan Mobley. Who would do that? I'm not pointing at my co-host at all.
Yeah, what if there was a split for the Cleveland Cavs? It's funny. I think we were split at least mostly through last season. I think we were split on the Cavs and the Knicks. I think I was more Kat than Brunson, at least early on. And I ended up more Mobley than Mitchell. And so the shout out to the bigs, I suppose. But
now we gotta respect scoring guards. Enough of this, y'all trying to get rid of scoring guards. I'm not even talking to you. I'm talking to y'all. Respect scoring guards. It's hard to get a bucket.
It is. It sure is. And they deserve their respect. Shout out Donovan Mitchell. Shout out Jalen Brunson.
Speaking of hard to get a bucket, this is just Victor's deep point, huh?
Could be. He has been terrifying defensively throughout his career when he's been on the court. Again, like, the Spurs have just been defending at a top five, top six level when he's been on the court his first 2 years. He takes up large portions of the basketball court because of how tall and how long he is. If the timing gets better, like, it's going to be very difficult to score on him. Like, he should be the heavy favorite for a DPOY. Right.
But you put a little salsa verde on that, could be. So,
well, one, which is, again, the universal caveat when we talk about any of these things, he does have to play at least 65 games. So we keep our eyes open for that. And the one thing that I will say.
Oh, my.
Steve. Chet Holmgren was really freaking good to start last season before he got hurt. And the Thunder weren't just the best defense in basketball last year. They were flirting with historical relevance with what they did defensively last year. They have a lot of good defenders. But I think before Chet went down, it did feel like he was clearly the best defender of the bunch of really good defenders. Nearly three blocks a game during that opening stretch. About 41% allowed at the rim when he was there. Defense was better with him on them off, if you care about that kind of thing. He was, at least statistically, the stingiest pick-and-roll defender in basketball through that early stretch among high-volume defenders. And just looking at him in general, incredible shot blocker, can eat up contact. You might move him a little bit, but you're not moving him much, and he can still contest and bother you. Mobile enough to switch on occasion. Again, I don't think you should be comparing him to Bam Adebayo on that front, but has enough, and then that's where the overall defensive context fits in. You beat him, you still got to deal with Jalen and Lou Dort and everybody else. But, like, best defender on historically good defense kind of gets you in the room, and Chet by himself is just kind of nuts as a defender. And so I will once again say Wimby should be the favorite for this award. I just would not rule out Chet Holmgren if he's healthy, because he is a filthy rim protector, is mobile enough to do different things. And the defense itself is just going to be insane again if they're healthy. So I would just say his name is, like, top contender to Victor Wembanyama at the very least. And then from there, like, Evan Mobley, Bam out of
this. Hold on. I think Wimby is very loud with his defense as far as we know what he can do, as far as with the blocks. When he's on the weak side, takes up a quarter of the court. He's in drop, swipes down, just, hey, I'm just going to take the ball. And it works half the time. You think you have an open pull up, it's erased in 2 seconds. Like, I think he's just got a loud deal. So if he's out on the court and he produces defensively, I think he has a good chance of winning this. Chet, interesting shout. I think the Thompson twins, pick one, are going to announce themselves as menaces defensively. And then I was going to ask you, how interesting does it get from there? Because we got Draymond, both the Warriors win. how further we go. The thing with Chet for me, bringing it back, is I wonder if he ends up paying a tax because of how good OKC is defensively and how many demons they have on that team. Mm-hmm. And so does he, you talked about a split earlier, does his credit get split into Lou Dort, Alex Caruso, OKC and Wallace got even better? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, does he get his share divvied up?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And I guess like the closest thing to that would probably be, funny enough, the Marcus Smart year, where like he wins it. And I still say, like, if Bam doesn't get hurt and he plays more games, like, I think that's probably Bam's year to get one. And he is also a name I'm going to mention in this conversation too. But even within Smart getting picked, there was still, I don't want to get to like majority, whatever, but like there were still a lot of people, credible folks to that degree, where it's like, hey, Marcus Smart is doing a lot. He does quarterback a lot. Robert Williams kind of sets the table because of his rim protection. And as we talked about during that year, and as you brought up first, hey, we're going to put Robert Williams on this non-spacing wing, keep him near the basket. We can cross match. We can have a lot of fun. And so like there is still just in general a big bias. And so while I am super high on Jalen Williams and Lou Dort and like Alex Caruso not being a full-time starter, I think if Alex Caruso started, this might be more of, I think the split is more likely. I do think just on balance, he's a better defender than Lou Dort, and he defends more different player types and stuff like that. With them coming off the bench, I think it is still a pretty clear pathway to, I think Chet is the most impactful guy. If you're getting into the numbers of it all, as we have more of those available, like bigs do generally just swing more things defensively. That's where I think we had a little bit of a back and forth about like the Dyson Daniels of it all last year. Or just like, well, obviously you can see it, but like building out the case with that plus the numbers and stuff like that. It is just easier for bigs to have that kind of like on-off impact, for example, than guards, just generally. And so, like, I think Chet will still have that over, like, a Lou Dort or Cason Wallace, et cetera. So that's where I think I worry less about him being the rep.
Understood. Understood. Front. Understood. Makes sense. Makes sense. Makes sense. You know what else makes – oh, go ahead.
I was about to ask you, like, could this actually be the Bam year?
It's uphill climb. Uphill climb. Miami's going to have to be so elite defensively, and they're going to have to win a lot of games because he doesn't necessarily have a volume to most people, unfortunately, with what he does defensively and what he has to do for Miami defensively. So, tough climb.
Absolutely. Last quick thing, then we get to rookie of the year. I mentioned Bam. One, he's just really good. But two, we talked about the Heat playing faster in preseason. Defensively, a lot more switching than we saw last year. It's kind of like, mm-hmm, a reversion to some of the older Heat teams with Bam at the center, where they've kind, mm-hmm, of shifted to more drop coverage. This year, it's felt like a lot more switching. And I wonder if that is his pathway to like the loud conversation, where you can point to, well, Bam switched more pick and rolls to anyone in the league again. And then maybe that's what gets him more into national consciousness.
I believe in Bam as a defense scanner every year, but I just think it's going to be tough if Bam is elite defensively. Miami's pretty good defensively. They're the 7 seed. Mm. It's going to be tough for people to get there, I think, in my opinion, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, that's fair. All right. Let's close with rookie of the year, Steve. Who is some of the
names? Are you planting your flag?
I do think Cooper Flagg is the favorite. I will say, though, and it's funny coming from me specifically, because I always find myself lower on high scoring, low efficiency, like perimeter player in rookie seasons.
Oh, there's no way.
But like, I do wonder, one, if the efficiency is just going to be higher than anticipated for Ace Bailey in Utah. Like, wow. Him plus Will Hardy just kind of does it for me. And I don't want to fall too much in love with like a preseason sample, because of course you never are supposed to do that. But if you're telling me Ace Bailey can get all these buckets, and now it's just like, well, actually, you only need 2 dribbles to get to your spot because of how we're screening you open, you might get the 15, 16 points per game on like league average or slightly below league average true shooting instead of like the Jalen Green year in his rookie year, for an example. A more efficient high scoring season, and Ace does have the size to do some of the defense stuff on top of that. I do think that could be interesting. Like, I think Cooper... I think Cooper's better, and again, I think he's the favorite, but and effectively utilize Ace Bailey, he's going to get the reps. Like, he's just going to start. Like, that is intriguing to me. I'll say that much. Yeah.
Yeah, that brother saw one elbow catch, post split, handoff, two dribble pull up. Saw another flare from the top and said, "Yep, I'm sold. I'm stunned, but salute to Will Hardy." I think for the Dunkers out there, we agree on Cooper Flagg just because of A, his skill set, do a little bit of everything, and the opportunity he's going to have to do a little bit of everything is pretty outstanding. He's going to grow throughout the year. I wonder if there's a world. I don't think VJ Edgecombe will have enough of a lift, but that could get interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a world where Dylan Harper gets off to a hot start and his drives and his playmaking pops.
Now, I have a question for you in particular.
What's up?
And let's roll with that scenario in which Dylan Harper plays well to start. Are you specifically ready for the De'Aaron Fox conversations that will pop up if Dylan Harper plays well?
No, I'm ready for a three-guard lineup with Devin Vassell at the four and Wimby.
Are you ready for the De'Aaron Fox conversations that are going to pop? Because, hey, Stephon Castles looked good, too. I am just saying. I like the Dylan Harper shout. I really like the VJ Edgecombe shout. Keep an eye on Khan. I'll sprinkle that in there. But that's probably more all rookie first team than like actual rookie of the year, unless we get some injuries.
Makes sense. I will very quickly declare Anthony Edwards is going to win clutch player of the year. I'm booking that right now.
Okay.
You can nail that to the board. So I'm going to add that. And before we head out, can I ask you, I have a free throw.
Okay.
It's kind of an unfortunate one.
Oh, no. Okay.
So are you ready to have a year of all-star / all-NBA talk without saying the name LeBron James?
Yeah, that is just kind of tough. I think LeBron is, by the time LeBron returns, he's either going to be eliminated or he's going to be like an ankle tweak away from being eliminated. And even then, it's him versus the other candidates. So, like, probably. Like, I mean, I say that, and it's just like, considering how long LeBron has played, he shouldn't be in these conversations anyway. Like, it's insane that he is as good as he is to have been, to still be at an all-NBA level. Oh, man, you made the face like I was about to slam him. No.
I thought that was going in a different direction. I was about to hit the Michael DeMille.
No. I'm saying it's incredible that he is still in all-NBA conversations just as a concept. And so, like, I guess the answer to your question is, like, technically yes, because that's just what the game's play is going to dictate. But, like, a salute to him for even being at this level still. Like, he deserves that. The question I thought you were going to ask is that in light of the Houston Rockets starting Amen Thompson and Kevin Durant and Jabari Smith Jr. and Alperen Sengun and also Steven Adams, am I ready for, like, Kevin Durant in the backcourt for all-star voting or something? I'd be like, absolutely the heck not. I am not prepared for that at all. No. But okay.
It's time to respect tall ball. I lied. I did have a second free throw, by the way.
Okay.
It was a setup.
Mm.
So are you ready for LeBron James to be voted as a starter anyways?
The answer is no. I will once again do my spiel. We can get out of here because I end up getting mad. We need to decide what the all-star game is. This either needs to be solely for the fans and divorce from contract incentives and all the things and Hall of Fame consideration. Either divorce that and make it for the fans, or this needs to be a serious thing since it Hall of Fame consideration, all-star incentive, et cetera. Like, it needs to be one or the other. Either take the money out of it and I don't care, get people in that the fans want to see, or this has money implications and thus we need to vote for the people that actually earn these berths. So if LeBron misses a whole bunch of time and he gets voted in as all-star starter, yes, I'm going to be annoyed by that because that's good. You know, we're messing with money. We're messing with legacy. That makes me uncomfortable. Yeah.
Understood. But you know what we're not messing with?
What?
The horns to get out of here. Let's go.
All right. Well, thank you, friends, for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe. Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We're here every Tuesday and Friday. Nakai's NBA on socials. Steve Jones 20 on socials. We will catch y'all later in the week.